This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Just what the world needs, a new Wall Street acronym. This one might be pronounced SETL. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Wall Street giant Goldman Sachs has filed a patent to develop its own virtual currency. Now, it's based on similar technology to Bitcoin and other cryptocurrency. Goldman hopes this will make its own transactions much faster and more secure, Marketplace's Sabri Benishaw reports.
Goldman's system is called SETLcoin. It's an electronic system for settlement, which is really just a word for sealing deals. As in, if I want to trade some bonds or some stocks, I send money and you send bonds or stocks. Deal is done.
They're trying to improve settlement time.
Christopher Vecchio is currency strategist with Daily FX. Settlement time can be surprisingly long right now. It can even take days. It usually involves some kind of middleman, and there's some risk that something could go wrong in that time.
You know, theoretically speaking, it's possible that the person you're trading with goes bankrupt, or runs out of money or their collateral is no longer valid.
What Goldman is trying to do is to prevent that by using the same technology that Bitcoin uses. It's called blockchain.
A blockchain is like the public ledger, I think would be the best way to illustrate it.
My account ledger is connected to your ledger, it's connected to someone else's ledger, and it's all encrypted so it can't be forged. Sealing a deal becomes almost instantaneous. There's no middleman. American Express, NASDAQ, Citibank, and UBS are just a few of the companies also exploring it. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishaw for Marketplace.
Profits for Barnes & Noble are due later today. As people go digital for their reading, Barnes & Noble went increasingly digital itself, the Nook Reader, for example. That hasn't been all that profitable. And now, as Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports, that bookseller is trying some old school strategies.
It seems Barnes & Noble has had a bit of a revelation.
That the physical bookstore is an asset, not a liability.
That's independent media consultant Michael Norris.
Bookstores are either cultural centers of their communities or they're just piles of books.
Barnes & Noble has moved away from the piles of books model. Its shelves are full of non-books, games and toys that have been selling well for the company. Stores have been holding events like a maker fair for kids and coloring book days for adults.
It's a way of getting people through the door.
Megan Labatt is with Spring Design Partners, a brand consultancy.
And the longer they stay in the store, the more they will likely buy.
What customers haven't been buying is Barnes & Noble's e-reader, the Nook, and its digital books. In a twist, stores have become the bright spot for the company. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
We've been covering the controversy after a company called Turing Pharmaceuticals bought rights to a 62-year-old drug to fight toxoplasmosis in infants and AIDS patients and then raised the price from $14 to $750 per pill. In response to the outrage, Turing is keeping its list price but lowering it for hospitals, among others. This week, there's news the big prescription drug manager, Express Scripts, is responding by contracting with another company to make a similar drug that will sell for $1 per tablet. Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell has been considering ways that economics could come to bear on the price of medicine. Morning to you, Chris.
Good morning, David.
Lots of proposals out there to try to deal with high drug prices, but this Turing thing, is this emblematic of a larger problem?
I think it really is, David. It's the proverbial canary in the coal mine. I mean, if you look at U.S. prescription drugs, prices are about 40% greater than they are elsewhere in the developed world. And I think that simply tells us we have room to maneuver to negotiate these prices down. Let's let Medicare, which buys 29% of all prescription drugs in the U.S., negotiate prices. Right now, Medicare can't by law.
Well, we have examples of a version of that from Europe. For instance, in the UK, the huge National Health Service, the socialized medicine delivery system, they're the ones who decide how much they pay for medicine.
They do, because they basically buy the drug supply for the whole country. Now, we have a very fragmented system where you have all kinds of different health plans. Veterans Administration gives us a little bit of an idea. Veterans Administration can negotiate, and its prices for pharmaceuticals are about 10 to 20% on average lower.
Now, you're speaking like a consumer here, Chris. You know, the pharmaceutical companies will say they're in a risky business. A lot of the stuff they try doesn't pan out. It costs a fortune. And these are prices they need to offset some of the development costs.
Well, you know, I think a government-granted monopoly for about 20 years or 20 years plus, depending on some maneuvers, there's just a lot of drawbacks to that system. When you have that much power, which is what the drug companies have over prices, you have to counteract that power with something else. And that, I think, is the negotiating power of Medicare, and then having more serious debate about, okay, should we think about other ways of financing and rewarding innovation other than this patent system? But in the meantime, let's at least negotiate some lower prices.
Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell in St. Paul, thank you.
Thanks a lot, David.
And as the guardians of interest rates in the U.S. apparently gear up for an interest rate increase, their counterparts in Europe are still thinking stimulus. The European Central Bank today lowered a key rate further into negative territory. And the ECB is still buying bonds to stimulate further, but did not expand this activity as much as expected. That dampened the mood on some stock markets earlier today. And there's a long, sorry tradition in journalism where the wretched reporter writes different versions of the copy in advance so that when the news gets confirmed, you're all ready with one or the other. This always goes wrong, in my experience, with the wrong copy going on the air inevitably. I say this because ahead of the European Central Bank's decision to lower interest rates today, the Financial Times, no less, mistakenly released alternate copy that said the ECB dashed expectations by leaving rates unchanged in surprising decision, the headline read. Goodness, you should look at the graph of what happened to the euro, which shot skyward in the awful moments before the FD corrected its mistake. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.